We were talking earlier on the show about the growing protests and unrest in Moscow. More demonstrations are planned for this weekend, supporting opposition candidates who've been barred from running in local elections. But the protests aren't just about Moscow elections. They're also about corruption. Protesters are also quietly focused on the man who controls the Kremlin, President Vladimir Putin. For the next few minutes, we're also going to focus on Putin, and today is a milestone in that respect. Putin has been in power for exactly 20 years. To help us understand how he got here, I'm joined by the world's Lucy Martirosyan.
So, Marco, all of this started in 1999, but before we go there, I want to start with this. Okay, so can you guess what sport this is? I'll give you a hint. It's Vladimir Putin in a gym.
All right, that was definitely not ice hockey, which he loves. Wrestling or karate or something?
It's judo.
Ah, okay.
It's a form of martial arts originally from Japan. It's Putin's favorite. And this is him sparring with the Russian Olympic team in 2014 in Sochi.
Right. I think I've seen photos of him doing judo, along with photos of Putin topless and hunting and on horseback, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. A strong man. Angela Stent had a book out this year. It's called Putin's World.
The sport that enabled him to break or rise above his rather difficult childhood and his indifferent school performance was judo. He's a judo champion. He's a judo master. He's even written books about that.
And this is one of the reasons Stent says why Putin likes the sport so much.
One of the attributes of that is that even if you're physically weaker than your opponent, you can take advantage of their distraction, of their own weaknesses, and move in, you know, while they're not paying attention.
Yeah, so watch my left hand, and then he chops you in the neck with his right hand.
Yeah, pretty much. I bring it up because I think this is going to help us with what we're about to hear, Putin's 20-year timeline in Russia.
Я обещал выборы.
On August 9th, 1999, then-Russian President Boris Yeltsin appointed a veteran Soviet spy, Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin, as Russia's acting prime minister. Yeltsin had just fired his entire cabinet. Not only that, his health was deteriorating, and he was an alcoholic.
So when Putin came in, he was such a contrast to Yeltsin. He was young. He appeared to be fit. He was kind of almost monosyllabic in the beginning. He was very quiet and withdrawn. Obviously, he changed after that.
But even though Putin was healthier and younger than Yeltsin, nobody knew who he was. People didn't know if they could trust him.
I never heard that anybody from former KGB would be any close to this team.
Andrei Ilarionov is Putin's former economic advisor. He's now a senior researcher at the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute, in Washington. It was unheard of that a director of Russia's National Intelligence Service, the FSB, would someday be leading the country. The Legislative Duma officially voted Putin in on August 16th. Within a month, Russia was thrown into a crisis. A series of bombs exploded in apartment buildings in three major cities, including Moscow. More than 200 people died. Putin blamed Chechen rebels for the attacks. The Russian army had been at war with separatists in the region of Chechnya. The apartment bombings gave Putin a reason to start a second war.
It was obviously a bloody war, and during that time, the way that the forces from Moscow, the Russian army, finally prevailed over the insurgents was by leveling the capital, Grozny, much in the same way as we can see Russia and the Syrians have done in Syria. So that was something that we were following very carefully. It was very controversial.
Angela Stent was working as a Russia specialist for the State Department at the time. She was watching closely as Putin promised to avenge the bombings. He said, if authorities find terrorists at the airport, they'll get them at the airport. If they find them on the toilet, they'll get them on the toilet. People liked that. It made them feel safe. Putin's approval rating surged. But these apartment bombings were suspicious. After a fifth bomb was discovered, three FSB agents were arrested for allegedly putting it there. Some journalists reported that the bombings may have been orchestrated by the Russian government. Some people who made these claims would later be killed. On May 7th, 2000, Vladimir Putin was inaugurated president of Russia for the first time. Yeltsin had resigned. It was Putin's chance to reassert Russia as a great power. Russia had suffered a financial meltdown 2 years before. There was political chaos, and the country hadn't gone over the breakup of the Soviet Union. Russia was on its knees, and Putin is the one credited with saving it. Andrei Ilarionov helped in his advisory role. He says Putin repaid Russia's debt and doubled its GDP in just 10 years.
It is necessary to admit that at least that time, it was a very clear demonstration how he was interested in understanding economic issues, in implementing rational economic policy. And that is why it was very comfortable to work with him, because he turned out to be best students in economics that I ever had in my life.
Russia was soon thriving. It was exporting more gas to Europe. It joined the G8, the group of eight highly industrialized nations. Ilarionov was Putin's personal representative at those meetings.
In the year 2000, he was ready to embrace West. Putin himself on record said several times that he would like to see Russia as a member of NATO.
Of course, it wasn't perfect. Putin refused help from the West during another disaster in 2000. The nuclear-powered submarine, the Kursk, sank in the Barents Sea. All 118 personnel on board died. Some critics say that Putin was too proud to ask the international community for help. Russia's biggest independent news channel, NTV, also criticized the Putin administration for the way it handled the disaster. A year later, the Kremlin took over almost all independent news media in Russia.
Security guards were placed around Russia's last independent national TV station.
It was the beginning of the end of democracy there. But the relationship between the U.S. and Russia was good, probably at its highest point in all of Putin's years. He met President George W. Bush for the first time.
I looked the man in the eye. I found it to be very straightforward and trustworthy. We had a very good dialogue. I was able to get a sense of his soul.
When 9/11 happened 3 months later, Russia was one of the first countries to reach out to America in its time of need. Within a few weeks, Putin was in the U.S. visiting Bush at his ranch in Crawford, Texas.
They brought rain, for which we're always grateful in the state of Texas.
Apparently the Russians were amazed by how modest this ranch was. And this is when they're all sitting around and square dancing and saying, you know, we're partners together in this fight against terror. Because we really were, at that point, allies. We had a common enemy defeating the Taliban. Things began to sour almost immediately in December of 2001, when the United States pulled out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty.
The United States of America is withdrawing from this almost 30-year-old treaty.
The radical change has happened in year 2003.
It was just over 90 minutes beyond President Bush's deadline for Saddam Hussein to leave Iraq.
Under heavy bombardment on the day the war started.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people.
That was the crucial point, and for the year and a half before that time, Mr. Putin himself, as well as many other people from the Russian team, were trying to persuade our American counterpartners that it is wrong to attack Iraq.
Maybe Putin was disappointed, even outraged. But there were a lot of lessons here for him, too. He realized that foreign intervention was an option, that you could get away with it, as he did in Syria, Ukraine, and before that, the Republic of Georgia.
When he attacked Georgia in year 2008, so he used exactly the same explanation. Okay, if it is possible for you in Iraq, why it is not possible for me in Georgia?
Ilarionov says Putin changed his attitudes inside Russia too. He went after the richest oligarch, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, a critic of his administration.
Once Russia's richest man, imprisoned Kremlin critic and former oil magnate...
It became clear rather fast, I would say, talking everything in relative terms, that Mr. Putin, having been a very strong proponent of economic reforms and of rational economic policies, at that same time, it means not later, not earlier, exactly at the same time, was not a very big fan of democracy, human rights.
What made Ilarionov really sick to his stomach was the way Putin handled a school hostage crisis in southern Russia. It was September 1st, 2004. Beslan celebrated Back to School Day. It would sound something like this. Parents came with their children. The kids were dressed up in their best clothes. They held bouquets of flowers that they would give to their teachers. They sang the Russian national anthem. It was like every September 1st in Russia, until it wasn't. Chechen rebels laid siege to the school. The terrorists held more than 1,000 children, parents, and school faculty hostage for 3 days in the auditorium. Mines surrounded the school. And when special operations forces stormed the site, it exploded.
Out of more than 1,000 people, 334, if I'm not mistaken, have been killed, murdered, and burned alive in that school. Yes, and that's a very clear demonstration of the attitudes towards people's life, what is important and what's not important. So that is why that was an absolutely critical decision for me. Personally, I could not work anymore for the person who gave such an order.
The European Court of Human Rights ruled that Russia could have done more to prevent the loss of life. A year later, Ilarionov resigned as Putin's economic advisor. At a news conference, he said that Russia was no longer a free country, that things radically changed. After the brief war with Georgia, America's new president, Barack Obama, attempted to improve relations with Russia.
We resolved to reset U.S.-Russian relations.
But he failed. Putin had found a loophole to stay in power. He could switch back and forth from prime minister to president. And when Putin planned to do his infamous switch a second time in 2012, it created unrest in the country. But it didn't topple him. At the Sochi Winter Olympics in 2014, Putin could show the world the best parts of Russia. He asked Russians to smile and be warm to tourists. This was his chance to prove how great Russia was. But 3 days after the end of the Sochi Games, Russia invaded Crimea, a part of Ukraine, and then annexed it. This is when its relationship with the West shattered. According to Human Rights Watch, Putin's Russia today is more repressive than it's ever been in the post-Soviet era. There's a tight control on freedom of expression. LGBTQ people are often tortured or killed. Life for Russia's neighbors and enemies can be scary. Dozens of opposition activists and journalists have already been killed, jailed, or exiled. Putin's ability to stay in power is impressive and calculated, says Angela Stent.
He has managed to create a system where the people who surround him are all dependent on him. They're dependent on him for their jobs, for the assets that they have. So he's created a system where he sits at the top of a pyramid, and that people closer to the top of the pyramid believe that if he's no longer atop the pyramid, you know, they're not quite sure what's going to happen to them.
But Andrei Ilarionov says it's more personal than that.
He has put himself into the dead end. He could not leave the top position of the Russian power, regardless how that top position would be called, president, prime minister, national leader, national Führer, whatever. So he just cannot leave. And he cannot leave not only because nobody allows him to do it. No, from his personal psychology, he thinks that soon he leave that position, it would be extremely dangerous for him, because in a dictatorship, nobody can ensure his property and life.
Lucy Martirosyan, is that true? I mean, could Putin's life be in danger if he leaves his rule in Russia?
We don't know for sure. Putin may have well been thinking about this early on when he extended protections to Yeltsin and his family in the 90s. It seems that every action Putin makes is extremely calculated.
Right, like his favorite sport, judo.
Right, like in judo. There's been speculation about what he might do after his presidential term ends in 2024. Maybe in 5 years he'll resign and announce a successor, one of his oligarch friends, or he could choose to somehow remove limits on the president post or remove it altogether so that he could stay in power longer as prime minister. And remember, Marco, he remains popular in Russia.
So you've showed us how the relationship between Russia and the U.S. deteriorated since George W. Bush, but Trump speaks even more warmly of Putin than Bush. I mean, isn't the relationship improving in some ways?
I think Putin was hoping for that, but he still doesn't really understand the United States and government here. There are irreversible wounds with Russia, and even if Trump can look past Putin's human rights abuses and war crimes, Congress can't. And that might be a detail that he overlooked. As Andrei Ilarionov told me, it might be too late for Putin to ever understand the West, and vice versa.
The World's Lucy Martirosyan, thank you very much for this.
Thanks, Marco.
We've got a timeline of major events from Putin's 20 years in power at theworld.org.